Thank you. Thank you very much. So, last slot of Evolve. Everybody's tired, so we better make it entertaining. I'm very happy to welcome you here. I'm going to talk to you about some work that I've been doing in the past few months, especially, but actually since the past 2 years already, on Xamarin Classic and the support for data mining in Xamarin Classic. This talk is not on MVVM-Lite in general. I had that talk at the last Evolve, and this talk can be actually downloaded, and there is a video online. You'll have a link in the last slide of this presentation, okay? So here I'm really concentrating on the data mining system. So a couple of words about my company. I work for a firm called Identity Mine. We are located in Seattle, Washington. Myself, I'm in Zurich, Switzerland. And we are a client application development firm. We help companies develop their application across the board, cross-platform. We love Xamarin because we like to have some very polished application with a native UI, and this is exactly what Xamarin is giving us. A few words about myself. Like I said, I live in Zurich, Switzerland. I am a Microsoft Regional Director, Microsoft MVP, and Xamarin MVP, which nowadays, I guess, is redundant. But no, it's not true. They want to continue the Xamarin MVP program, and I'm happy to hear that. And I am also the author of MVVM Lite, which I started in 2009 and have been maintaining ever since. So a few words about MVVM Lite. It's an open source toolkit. I guess a lot of you are using it, probably. Those who don't, it's basically a toolkit which is not very invasive. It's helping you to build your application faster, but it's not constraining you to build it in a certain way. Those are components that you can opt in or opt out if you don't want to. You can replace those components with others if you prefer. It consists of libraries that you're going to add to your application. A lot of people do that through NuGet, or you can just add them as references if you want. And if you prefer, you can also start with File New Project. There are some templates, so there is an extension for Visual Studio, and then you get an application which is already scaffolded, which is already wired, if you will. Code snippets are very convenient. They also install into Visual Studio, and then they allow you to type a shortcut, and then after that it's going to expand, and then you'll have the code snippet, like for example an observable property, the type of code that we type over and over again, and this way you don't have to type it, and also you don't do errors, like typos and stuff like that, so it's helping. And finally, guidance, the talks that I'm giving here, a lot of other talks, a lot of videos, a lot of documentation, articles. Everything's on mvvmlite.net, and from there you can get started and explore. The libraries are where the data mining system is located, and so of course data mining is only available in mvvmlite for Xamarin Android and Xamarin iOS, because in Xamarin Forms you already have an out-of-the-box data mining system, as well as on Windows XAML, it's already out-of-the-box. And you'll see that the data binding system for Android and iOS in MVVM Lite is very strongly inspired from that. So to this day, I have about 1,400,000 downloads. It's quite a lot. I was surprised to see that apparently a lot of people per day are downloading the toolkit, which is both awesome and scary. And it's actually used in Windows, which is even more scary. I hope they tested the thing well. This is a Windows messaging application. It's one of the examples where they were very good citizens and they actually show the open source project that they are using. Okay, so what is data binding? Data binding can be defined as a relationship between two properties. And basically what is going to happen is that the data binding is going to take care of making sure that the source value is propagated to the target value. And of course, it's a coupling. There is a source object and a target object, and those two are communicating in a way, okay? But it's what we call a loose coupling, which means that if at some point a binding is attached, the garbage collector can still collect the target object or the source object. So this is not a strong coupling like you would have if you had a reference. So in that sense, it's a nice thing to have if you want to have layers and decouple your layers and have multiple teams working on the layers in a loose manner, okay? At the last Evolve, I talked about my first question when I came to Xamarin was, does it even make sense to have MVVM? And I think we answered that question by saying, yes, it does, mostly because of the decoupling between the layers. And also, you can share code this way, right? You can have your model, view model, on other platforms, such as Windows, for example. You know that with Windows 10, now you have really the same code across the board. And adding Xamarin iOS, Xamarin Android to it is, you know, touching even more people. And the cost is very reasonable, in fact. So if we illustrate a few basic concepts of binding, we always have a source object, and this source object has a source property, and then, of course, we have a target object and a target property. Now, when you create the binding, when you declare the binding, there will be a flow of information, and basically, the target property is going to be set to the same value, okay? And if during the course of the application, the source value changes, there will be an event of some kind. And then, again, the change will flow from the source to the target. So for example, if you have a checkbox as a source and the checked property, and then another checkbox and the checked property, that's how you would write things in XAML, okay? So you have the source object here, you have the source property, which are inside the binding, and then you have the target object and the target property to which the binding applies. Now in MVVM Lite, that's how you write things, and we do this in code. You go into the activity or the view controller or your fragment or basically any view object, then you say this.setBinding, and then after that you're going to have the source property, source object, source property, target object, target property. So it's quite similar, it kind of makes sense, and of course those parse expressions, those property expressions can be as complex as you want, so you can nest them, okay? You can have myViewModel.selectedItem.name, for example. In iOS, we don't have checkboxes, but you can do that, for example, with a switch, and again, same thing, right? Source object, source property, target property, very similar. In fact, it's the only iOS code snippet I have, the rest is with Android, but basically it's the same, so it doesn't make sense to duplicate everything. And by the way, the sample code that you get is implemented for Android, iOS, and also for Windows. So it would make sense to see how you do things in XAML. And it was actually interesting because the binding system is not as developed as in Windows as the one I have here. And so I couldn't do some of the features that I wanted to do. So anyway, so the event that happens on the source, the event that the binding observes that triggers the binding, it depends on the source object. If the source object is a view model, so basically it implements iNotify property change, it has a property change event, that's what triggers the binding. Now we have the case where the source object can be a UI element. And in that case, it depends on the UI element, okay? Sometimes if it's a checkbox, for example, by default, I'm going to observe the check change event because that's the one which makes sense. If it's an edit text, I'm going to observe the text change event, which means the binding is going to be updated every time that the user is typing something. In iOS, with the switch, I observe the value change event. Now, of course, you can configure any event you want. Like for an edit text, sometimes you don't want to observe the text change event because you don't want the binding to actualize every time that the user types one single character. What you will want is maybe focus change, so that when the user is done, set the focus to something else, then only the binding is actualized. And you'll see some samples in a moment. And finally, if the source object is, well, a dumb object, what we sometimes call a POCO, plain old CLR object, it doesn't have any event, it doesn't really raise any property change, in that case, the binding is still going to work, but it's what we call a one-time binding, meaning that the value is set from the source to the target once, and then any subsequent changes are ignored. We have a mode also in a binding. And for example, if we have the normal case, what's going to happen is that the flow is going to go from the source to the target. And that's what we call the one-way mode. But of course, we can also have the two-way mode, where changes on the target are also observed and are going to flow back to the source. And that's very convenient when your UI element is an input object, such as a text box or maybe a checkbox, these kind of things. So this is how you would do things in XAML, and similarly, that's how we do things in MVVM Lite. We use a binding mode enumeration. Now, sometimes you want to convert values, and in that case, I have a checked property, which is a Boolean. I want to go on a text view, which is a string, okay? And so I'm going to have to convert. Now, if it's a simple value conversion, .NET actually has that and does it by default, implicitly. So you don't have to write a converter for that simple scenario. For example, if you have an integer and a Boolean, one is converting to true and zero converts to false. If you have a Boolean and a string, the Boolean value true converts to the string true with a big T. Okay? And everything which is not true with a big T converts to false. So that's the implicit conversion if you want. But of course, you can also specify your own conversion. And in MVVM Lite, we do that with a method, which we chain to the binding, which is called convert source to target. And that's where you will convert your code, where you will write your code, your conversion code. And then this code, this exit value, is going to be applied to the target property. And of course, you can do that in the other direction as well. So you also have convert target to source in the same manner. Now, there is a special case which I call when source changes. And this is also one of those methods that you can chain on the binding. And when source changes, historically, comes from the problem that in iOS, you cannot actually bind to a button's title property because it doesn't have a setter. You have to use a method setTitle. And setTitle takes the title, the string, and it also takes the state to which this text corresponds. So basically, what you're going to do, you're going to define when source changes. You pass an action, which is the code that you want to execute. And inside there, you can do whatever you want. Okay? So like I said, historically, it comes from iOS button set title. But basically, you can use it for any code you want. Now, that can be convenient, for example, if you want to set two properties whenever the source property changes. You have two target properties, these kind of things. And so in that case, what I'm going to do, I'm going to call set title on the button. And the goal is achieved. So let's see a few demos. So what I'm going to do is show you an application in Visual Studio. And that's the code that you will have. It's kind of a silly application. It doesn't do anything useful, but it's just showing all the cases that you can have. And like this, you have the code sample. And later, we'll run this application. So first of all, I have a binding here, which I define between a view model, and this view model is defined here. That would be the binding context or the data context in the XAML application, but in classic, we don't have that. And so I say, OK, I want to bind between the vm.myBool property, which is an observable property, and the checked property of a checkbox. And because this is a view model, I'm going to use a property change event. Now here I have a command. We'll talk about command a little bit later. Don't worry about that for the moment. But basically, this command is going to toggle this Boolean property so that we see in the UI when something happens. Then I have another binding here between an edit text and a text view. And so because this is an edit text, I'm going to use a text change event by default. I didn't specify any other event here. So I'm just using the default event here. Then here I have a checkbox as the source and a checkbox as a target. And so this is a checkbox. I'm going to use a check change event, again, by default, because I didn't specify anything else. Of course, you're free to specify another event if you want. So here we have a case with a custom event. So for example, here I have an edit text. And I'm going to trigger the binding only when the edit text is clicked or tapped. Okay? So you're observing the source event click. Observe source event is a new name for a method that I used to call update source trigger, which came from Windows, but it was kind of messy. Nobody really understood what it did, and so I changed the name. Update source trigger is still there. It's just deprecated. Okay, so you'll get a warning. You have time to replace it, probably in two versions, more or less. I'm going to just remove it. After that, I have another example which makes a little bit more sense. It is an edit text. This is a target, and I'm observing the focus change event. And so this is a case where a user is typing something. You don't want to raise the binding to trigger the binding every time. Only when he's done and tapping somewhere else, then you want the value to actualize. After that, we have the conversion case. So here I have a checkbox as a source, and I have an edit text as a target. Notice that this is a two-way binding here. And I don't define any conversion. And so basically, I'm going to use a default.NET conversion. Again, a true in Boolean is going to convert to the string true with a big T as a text. And back. And here, I have the same binding. So basically, I have a checkbox and an edit text. But this time, I'm defining custom code to do the conversion. So if I have the value which is true, I'm going to return TTT, otherwise FFF. And the back conversion, anything which is not TTT is going to convert to false. And if I have really TTT, it's going to convert to true. Now, this code here is fairly simple, but of course, you can make it as complex as needed. And for example, if you have already some value converters in Windows, you can take the conversion code, put it in a PCL safely so that you can call it from everywhere, and you can just use that. Note that PCLs don't support high-value converter from Windows, which is kind of a limitation. So you'll have to basically have this code somewhere else. Okay, but it's easy to refactor. Okay, the when source changes example. So here I have a binding. Notice that I only have a source property here. I don't have a target property. In fact, you will get an exception if you try to use when source changes and also a target property. I had some nasty recursion effects, which were really very bad to handle. And at some point, I was running out of memory with these kind of things. So I decided to protect the developers against their own will, which I guess we do sometimes. And I just don't let you define a target. It's not really a limitation, because you can always do the target setting inside the when source changes. And here, for example, I set this text view, but I also set the text on this checkbox. All right, let's see it working. So here I have a sample. And here is, oops, what are you doing? Here we go. So here I have the first example. Interesting scenario. My mouse is out of whack. Okay. All right. So here I have the toggle button. Like I said, it's going to toggle the value on the view model. And then there will be a property change event, which is setting the checkbox. Yay. Now, of course, this is a one-way binding. And so if I uncheck the checkbox, nothing's going to happen. It only happens in the UI. Okay. If you really want to actuate the binding, you have to do that here. Now, here I have on the text. And so basically, if I remove text, you see that it actuates. It's using the text change event. Every time I type something, the binding is actuating and is reacting. The checkbox, same thing. I have here the checkbox. If I uncheck this one, it doesn't do anything because it's a one-way binding. Again, you could do a two-way binding, no problem. But here we didn't. And so here is the one-way binding working. Then we have binding with custom event. In that case, remember, that was a click. And so I'm going to just do something. Notice that the target value doesn't change at all. But if I click or tap on it, here we go, the binding was actualized. And like I said, this case doesn't really make a huge lot of sense. But here we have a case which makes more sense. I'm going to remove, and we'll say something to you. And then if I change the focus, here we go, the binding was actualized. Finally, we have the conversion. And so here I have the default conversion of .NET. If I have false, if I click, it's true. If I go here and delete the E, anything which is not true is false in this definition. And so the checkbox is unchecked. Same thing with custom conversion. If I go here and delete the T, you see that it unchecks. So that's working. And this one is a two-way binding. Okay. All right, when source changes. When it's initialized, it was null. But now you see that I'm setting the value of the checkbox and also of the text view. So I do two operations at once. That can be one scenario which is interesting sometimes. OK, let's go back to the slides. Ha! You'll never guess. Microsoft PowerPoint has stopped working. Microsoft PowerPoint is restarting. It doesn't tell me Windows is checking what went wrong or something like that. OK, so give me just one sec. All right, almost there. And here we go. All right, so we'll have a few rules. And really, it's very, very small. The only rule that really matters is that you can only set a binding if the source object and the target object are already instantiated. Okay? So when you call this.setBinding, and for example, your source is a vm.something, the VM part has to exist. And same thing for the target. If you have a myCheckbox, for example, the myCheckbox has to be instantiated already. Typically, I do that in the onCreate method or in iOS on viewDidLoad. That's really the only restriction. After that, the source and the target properties may not even exist. Like, for example, if your source is myViewModel.selectedItem.name, if the selected item is null, no problem at all. Your application won't crash. And then as soon as selected item is set, the binding is going to work. Okay? So I'm observing the whole chain. And similarly, if the source and the target properties are null, well, it's just a special case. I mean, it's nothing really special. Okay? So that is also going to work. As soon as the source property is set to something, the change is going to propagate. The property path may change, and that's a nice feature of this binding system, because again, if you have my view model dot selected item dot name as a source, the selected item is going to change all the time, every time that the user is selecting something in the list view. Okay? And so again, the binding is going to just actualize, and that's going to work fine. Now remember, it's a loose coupling. Okay? The binding system is using weak references, which means that your application, if you don't pay attention, your application is going to work, and then not work. And it's a nasty bug because you don't know why. And in fact, what happened is that the garbage collector came and said, oh, this little binding is not attached, I'm going to just leave it. Okay? And so it's really kind of nasty. You have to be careful. Just save the binding. It's just enough to save it in a list somewhere. You don't have to do anything with that list. If you just save it, it's okay. And the this.setBinding method is going to return the binding, so you can just save it. Right? Okay, the chain of properties, that's the case that I told you when you have, for example, the you could have my view model dot my model dot my property as a target, for example. So if the property changes and tries to access the my model part, the my model part is null, nothing is going to happen. Actually, it's a null reference exception if you want. But the binding is basically handling that, not crashing your app. As soon as you set the object, the binding is going to actualize the value. Now there are two new properties on the binding system, and those new properties are in version 5.3, which I released yesterday. The fallback value and target null value. Those names come from Windows, so you might have heard that already. Those are special value for the binding. Fallback value is used in case there is an error when you try to resolve the path. So that's the case where my view model dot selected item dot name, and then the selected item is null. That's a null reference exception. That's an error, so we use a fallback value. Target null value is used when the property itself is null. So in that case, that would be the name part which is null for some reason. Okay? And those values are something you use typically to inform your users. Or maybe you don't want to store null into your database and you want to store something else instead. These kind of things. Okay? But typically for informing the user. Nothing is selected right now. Something like that. Okay? So let's see a demo for that. And so before we go to initializing, I just want to show you the saving part. So you see that in my code here, I've been saving those bindings here, but I've been saving them as local variables. That's not enough, right? It's still, oops, thank you. Because it stayed on extend when it crashed, I guess. Sorry about that. Okay, here we go. All right, so let's go back. What I was saying is that when I created my binding, I saved them as a local variable, and that's not enough. You want to save them in something which is an attribute of your view, okay? So basically what you can do, once you have all those local variables, you can save them in a list of bindings, for example, and this list is up here. Okay, binding is the base class for all bindings, so that's enough. But basically, this is not typically how you do things. It's too much code, right? Typically, what you do is something like that. You do bindings.add, and then this.setBinding, and like this, it's going to save the binding automatically. If you have only one, you don't want to have a list. What you do is just binding equals, and then this.setBinding, okay? So here we have the case where I have vm.model.mymodel property as a source, and when I create the view, the model is going to be null. It's my own code. I just set it to null. And so in that case, the binding is going to use a fallback value. Now, if I click once on this button and actuate this command once, I'm going to create the model object, but then the target is still going to be null. The property is still going to be null. In that case, we use the target null value. Okay? And then if I click again, this time the value is going to be set. So basically what we have is down there, you see model object is null. If I click once, now value is null, that's the target null value. And then if I click again, this time, I'm just showing datetime.now.ticks, so basically it changes all the time. All right, so far, so good. Now let's talk about commanding. And so commenting is, is not exactly data binding, but it is very closely related. And so when you have a framework which is doing binding, normally you also have commenting. Okay, like in Xamarin Forms, you have binding and commenting. So in how does it work? This is typically a scenario that you solve with commenting. You have a button and a text field, and you have a view model, and you have a command with execute. Okay. And so what you want to do is when the user actuates the control, here it's a button, but it doesn't have to be. It could be any control. You want to execute the command. And you don't want to have an event handler, because event handlers are tight coupling. So you want to use a command instead. Now, the nice thing with commands is that they support a parameter. Unfortunately, they support only one parameter. It's a restriction of the I command interface, which is as pretty much as old as .NET. I think it was in .NET 2.0 already. So it's a kind of an old interface. But basically, with one parameter, you can already do quite a lot of things. So this parameter can be passed to the execute method. And it can be a static parameter. For example, in that case, the text is a string. So my command is a command of string. It's going to handle a string. Okay. Or it could be that you want to observe the value of the parameter. If you have a text field, you want to see when the user is typing something. And in that case, we are going to use something which is great for, to observe the changes, which is a binding. So either you pass a string, or you pass a binding to a string, okay? Depending what you want to do. Now, you also have a can execute part in a command. It's part of the iCommand definition. And what can execute is going to do, it's going to observe the parameter, say, oh, in that case, I allow you to execute the command, or I don't allow you, and then in that case, it's going to disable the control, okay? Like I say, sometimes it's interesting to observe parameter changes. The user is typing something, and so you can use a binding. And so, for example, if the user is deleting text, suddenly the text is empty. The command says, I cannot do anything with an empty text because I don't want to send an empty string to the server, for example. And so it's going to disable the button. Typical command scenario. Now, I want to take a moment to talk to you about another nasty bug you may have with data binding, and not just with data binding, but generally speaking, as soon as you do something with reflection. And it's the linker issue. So if you have source code with a button, this button is going to have a number of events. And there is a very clever way to reduce the size of your libraries, which is to run them through a linker. And this linker is going to check your code, and if the click event is not used, it's going to remove it. That's a great idea, but unfortunately, the linker is a little bit too aggressive in Xamarin. And it doesn't understand reflection. So if you say, I want to set the command on the button, but you don't say for which event, for me, by default, I'm going to use a click event, so it's fine. But for the linker, it says, oh, the click event is not used anywhere. And so the click event is going to be removed. That's a very nasty bug because it only happens in release mode. And so like everybody, you don't test your application because before pushing it to the store. And I know I don't. No, just kidding. You have to test your applications in release mode, okay? But basically, suddenly you see, oh, damn it, it doesn't work, right? And that's typically a scenario. This is a well-known issue with the linker. It is actually documented, workarounds are documented on the Xamarin documentation, okay? So what you do is that you say, hey, I'm going to assign an empty event handler. And in fact, because we are human and we are much more clever than a dumb linker, you can even say, if false, assign the event. And the linker is going to ignore the if false, okay? It's not going to know that the false never changes, the flag never changes. And basically, you never run the code, but the code is there anyway, so the linker is going to leave your click event, okay? So you'll see that code in the sample. That's why, and there is also some explanation. So don't be surprised if you see that. Okay, so, all right, see, this time it switched fine, I tell you, PowerPoint. Okay, so here is the code which is subscribing to the event to avoid the linker issue, and this is the place where this workaround is documented, okay? The false flag is funny because it's never true. So we, clever humans that we are, we know that this code is never going to be run, but the dumb linker doesn't know, and so it will leave the check change event, the text change event, and the click event, all right? Not great. I would love to be able to do that automatically. Well, it doesn't quite work right now. If you have an ID, send me an email. Okay, so let's see the command. this is my command activity. I have my view model here, and here I'm going to say, this is a simple command. Let's take a look. The command is simply going to have an execute method. It doesn't have a parameter. You see, this is empty here. It's just going to show a dialog. It doesn't have a can execute, so it's always executable. Very simple case. What I do here, I have simple command, button, dot set command, and then I just pass the command. That's all. Now, in that case, by default, the click event is going to be used because it's a button. And of course, you could change that. You can put your own event if you want. Another case, in the case of a checkbox, I'm using the check change event, which makes sense. Now, you can also have a custom event. So for example, here I have a custom, I have an edit text. And then I'm going to say I want to trigger the command on focus change. So the user is typing something, click somewhere else, the focus changes, and the command is executed. Okay. One improvement I did in version 5.3 is that now you can pass a static parameter to a command. Before, you had to pass a binding all the time. That was cumbersome because you had a binding to a value which never changes. Silly, okay? So now you can really just pass a string or whatever the command requires. In fact, let's take a look at this command. This command, I'm using here relay command, but you could use any I command, right? I support any I command, not just my own. Here I have the execute case, which is taking the parameter. It is of type string, all right? Dialog service is going to show that. And there is a can execute here, which is going to disable the UI element if the text is null or empty. So that's the case that I had before. When the user is deleting text, when the text is empty, the button is going to be disabled. And again, I support any UI element, not just buttons, right? In Windows XAML, to support any UI element, you would have to use what we call behavior, for those of you who know that, right? Here, it's just set command is going to work. Okay, so that was a static parameter. Now we want to have an example where we have a dynamic parameter. And so what we do, we create a binding. And that's the same syntax as before. I'm going to call set binding. This is my source property. I don't have a target property here. I could have one. But in that particular case, I'm only interested in the change of value. So I don't define a target parameter, a target property. Then I save the binding because I don't want the garbage collector to eat my binding. And then finally, I'm going to call set command. And so before I had set command with a static string. And here I'm calling set command with the same command, but this time I'm passing a binding. And so if we run the code, what we will see here, ignore that for now, we'll come back to this. Okay, first of all, I'm going to click the button and show the event. For a checkbox, I'm using check change, same command. Static parameter, remember it's a string, right? It doesn't change. And here we go, this is a static. And here I have the custom event. And so if I go here, I have the focus now, I'm going to do whatever, and then click somewhere else. And that triggers the event, okay? Quick question to see if you follow. Why is it showing focus change will trigger the command, even though here I have focus change will trigger? It's because I was passing, if you saw the code before, you probably didn't pay attention. I don't blame you because it was kind of hidden. Basically, I was passing a static value. I was passing the value of the text when the binding is established. If you want to observe the changes, you need to pass a binding, okay? And the case where I pass the binding is down there. You see now my button is disabled because my command says I don't want you to send or to show an empty message. However, if I start typing, hello again, this time it's enabled and I can show it. If I go and delete, et voila, it's disabled. Okay? So here we had a few improvements here. Notably, you don't need to specify the name of the event every time. I support a button and checkbox in Android. I support switch. Buttons in iOS, okay? In iOS, I use a touch-up inside button, except if it's a UI navigation bar button, in which case I use a clicked event, because apparently two buttons cannot have the same name for an event in iOS. All right. Now let's go to the really exciting part. I'm going to talk to you about lists. And so before, I already had support for list view in Android, and that was pretty much it. And now I added support for recycle view in Android, collection view source in iOS, and table view source in iOS as well. So what you have is a scenario where you have an observable collection, and you have a list UI element. And of course, you would like those two to be synchronized. Observable collection is going to raise an event when the content changes. Okay, when you add an item, remove an item, or if you change the order of the items. Would be great if those two were synchronized. In Android, you have to write an adapter for that. And in iOS, you have to write a table view source or maybe a collection view source, depending what you do. Which is really annoying because it's a lot of repetitive code. So in MVVM Lite, we take care of that. We give you an extension method, which is going to say, hey, look at that, I just reached my step goal. Cool, I was like walking, okay. So basically, what it's going to do, you're going to call the get adapter extension method or get collection view source, get table view source. It's going to return this object, which is an MVVM Lite object, and the object is going to take care of observing the changes. All right? So if you add an item, it's going to add a view, etc. And the nice thing is that with the latest additions, you can actually have binding between the view and the item that the view represents. And that can be a two-way binding. So that's going to simplify your view code tremendously, because if you have a checkbox, somebody unchecks the checkbox, it's going to be propagated into your model directly. And then you can save the value or do whatever you want. Okay? Just be a little bit careful. You know that this code is called many times because of the recycling mechanism. Okay, so you don't want to have 1,000 bindings on your view. It's a bad design anyway. I wouldn't recommend anyway, right, to have so many UI elements. But basically, if you have 1, 2, 3 bindings, no problem at all. And it's going to help you. Always test for performance anyway, right? Now, of course, if you remove an item, it's also going to adapt with you. And let's see a demo of that. So what I have in my code, is a list activity. And this activity is using a list view model. So this view model is going to have an items property. This is an observable collection of item. I'm inside the view model now. And here I do a few things. First of all, let's see the constructor. I'm going to build here 8 of those items. I'm going to toggle every second item. I'm going to observe the property change on the item just because I want to update a string just to show you that the binding is working. And then I have here an add method, which is going to add an item to the list, to the collection. And I have a delete command. Now this one requires the item, and that's going to be the selected item so that it can delete it and remove it from the view. And it's also going to be disabled if the item is null. So if nothing is selected, the button is going to be disabled. That's my view model. This code is testable. You can unit test it, no problem. Now let's see how we use that in the activity. Here we go. First thing we do, we call, in that case, getRecyclerAdapter, because this is a recycler view that I have. So I'm calling the getRecyclerAdapter. You need to pass a few things. You need to pass here a delegate to a method which is going to do the binding. Okay, this is a typical pattern in Android, and in iOS as well, by the way. Every time that the view is displayed, it has to get the item and bind it. Okay, this code is actually going to help you. Here is a signature. I'm going to pass a view holder. The reason why I pass a view holder is because it's a recycler view. If you don't know how a recycler view works, you can check the documentation. There is also a university course on it, which is pretty good. And by the way, here I'm using a caching view holder, which is an MVVM Lite object, but you can use your own view holder if you want. Okay, it's going to work the same. Caching view holder has a few additions which makes your life easier, especially with data binding. You don't have to use them. It's also going to give you the item which correspond to this position, and I also give the position, even though in many cases we actually don't use it. Then I'm going to do something. So you know I told you that the holder has a few methods which help you, and for example here I have this method called find cache view by IDs, because you want to cache your IDs in the recycle view pattern. okay? Because this method is called many times, and the find view by ID of Android is costing quite a lot of time. So you want to cache your method. The caching view holder is actually doing that for you. So again, you don't have to use it, but if you want, it's helping you. In that case, I'm going to set the name, and because I know the name of the item never changes, I'm not doing a binding here, I'm just setting the value. Then after that, we have here a checkbox. And the first thing I'm going to do, I want to establish a binding on this text box, on this checkbox. And I have a toggled property in the item, which is going to be observable, all right? So first of all, I'm going to delete the existing binding. Again, remember that this view is going to be reused over and over again, right? The recycler view instantiated only as many views as needed to fill your screen. But maybe you have 100 items and only 10 views. So those are going to be reused. You need to delete the binding first. If you don't, you're going to have some nasty side effect because you're going to have bindings to multiple items. So first you delete the binding, and then you create a new binding. And in that case, I'm not using the setBinding method, I'm using the new binding here. I'm going to make a binding between the toggled property of the item, which is observable, and the target is a checkbox, the check property of the checkbox. It's a two-way binding, okay? And then I save the binding inside the holder. So it's straightforward enough, but that is helping you later. Okay, second parameter of this getRecyclerAdapter method, in that case I'm passing the resource ID of an AXML file, because my RecyclerAdapter is going to take care of inflating the AXML and all that. Now if you prefer, you can also pass a method which is called create view holder. So basically you can create your own code. In that case, it's just simplified. And then finally, the third one is actually optional, and it's going to be a delegate which is called every time that any item is clicked. Now inside the adapter, I am taking care of saving the selected item. So you don't need to do that in the view. You can actually use the adapter's one. And in fact, it's an observable property, so you can actually bind to it, which is nice, okay? But here you can do some view-specific things, like for example, set the background to another color to show which one is selected. Okay, now we have the adapter. I'm going to set it here. I'm going to set the layout manager because it's a recycler view. And here, for example, I do a binding between adapter.selectedItem.name. And because selected item can be null when nothing is selected, I set a fallback value and I say nothing is selected here. I inform my users. For the commands here, I have my set command on add command. It's an easy one. For the delete command, remember I need the selected item, and I want to disable the remove button if the selected item is null. And so to do that, I do a binding, and I save it because I don't want the garbage collector to eat it, and then I pass the binding to the delete command. Okay? All right, so if we check the code, so here we have the 8 items that I showed you before being instantiated. Nothing is selected. If I go and select number 3, you see that now the background is yellow. This is where I do that. Let's go in on item click. Here on item click, you're going to get the old view and the new view, which is hidden here. And so you can remove the background on the old view, set the background on the new view, or do whatever UI operation you want. Here, for example, number 5 is selected. Now for the toggled, you see this property is showing all the toggled items. I have 0, 2, 4, 6. Now I have 0, 2, 4, 6, and 7. Okay? So the two-way binding is working. Okay? Now if I add a lot of items, just going to add a few, just to make sure that the recycling is working. And I'm going to scroll up and down. When I come back up, you see the items are still selected. I go down, I can select this one, go up again. So basically, the recycling is working fine. Okay? For the removing part, if I select 662 and I remove it, now I don't have anything selected, the button is disabled. All right? So again, all the view model code is unit testable, and the view code is a matter of declaring your bindings and then trying it out. All right, I'm almost at the end. So first of all, I have a few next steps. I'm going to fly through them a little bit because I'm at the end of my presentation. But basically, I would like to add string format. It's a property which is useful in certain scenarios. I would like to add a little bit more coverage. I have 300 unit tests at this time, which run on both Android and iOS. I have a few threading issues. At the moment, you should set the binding value on the UI thread. Same limitation than in Windows. And for command, the same thing. You should execute the command from the UI thread. It's a limitation I would like to remove. And so I'm going to make the code thread safe, but it's a little bit work. I didn't want to do it just before Evolve. I also want to add commanding. Right now, you can do bindings in your items, in your views. But if you have a button and click it, it's a little bit tricky right now. Same reason than the binding, because of the recycling. You have to basically detach the command. I got code from the community. If you're in the room, thank you very much. If you're not in the video, thank you very much. So that code is going to flow into the next version. And finally, I would like to support binding in XML, like, for example, MVVM Cross has it. I was against it in the beginning because you don't have any IntelliSense. If you have a typo, it's a little bit dangerous. But actually, the syntax is more compact. And after using it in one project, I said, well, it actually makes sense. And so I'm going to support it in a future version. Here, too, I have code already. It's just a matter of testing it and putting it inside it. Here is a resource. And by the way, this address, Evolve 16, on my website, you will get the slide and samples. In a few days, you will get a nice 404 right now if you try this. In a few days, you'll have everything. And just leaving it so that people can take pictures. At this point, I want to thank you very much for your attention. Oops. If you have questions, I don't really have time for them in the forum, but I will stay here for a few more minutes, and you can come and talk to me. If you don't want to talk to me in person, which I respect, you can go on Twitter or on my blog, and you have all the contact info. I hope you liked it. I hope it was informative, and I wish you a great time with Wozniak in an hour or so. Thank you very much.